Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to the original Bachelorette, on network TV anyway, Trista Sutter. You may remember her best as Trista Wren, runner-up on the first installment of ABC's The Bachelor, and then the first woman to star in the companion series, The Bachelorette. Stick around. Trista not only chose her own Prince Charming on the show, she married him, had two kids with him, and they're still married. So there, Mr. and Mrs. True Love Skeptic. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of losers from The Millionaire Matchmaker, Ready for Love, Blind Date, Temptation Island, Average Joe, Married by America, and, just for fun, a sampling of cheaters from Cheaters in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. When Trista Wren appeared on the very first run of ABC's reality series, The Bachelor, back in 2002, America fell in love with her. But The Bachelor himself, Alex Michelle, not so much. That really hurt Trista, who genuinely thought Alex was the one for her. At the last moment, seemingly, he chose a different girl. Who? I don't know. She's not going to be my guest today. America and the producers of The Bachelorette saw Trista cry genuine tears that night. Everyone but Alex Michelle, and who cares about him, believed that the pediatric physical therapist from Miami Children's Hospital by day and Miami Heat dancer by night was robbed. That's when the spinoff series, The Bachelorette, was born. And this time, Trista was the one doing the picking, handing out the roses. When all was said and done, she went with a handsome firefighter whom she swears she fell in love with at first sight. A dozen years later, Trista and Ryan Sutter are still married, parents of two children, and happy. And the original Bachelorette just published a book, Happily Ever After, The Life-Changing Power of a Grateful Heart. And with that, Trista Sutter, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you here. And I'm going to admit right at the top, the only year I remember watching any part of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette was your year. I was one of those people. I was one of those people, you sampled it. It sounded kind of interesting. But then my feeling was after I'd seen The Bachelor and how crushed you were there and then saw you rise again like the Phoenix on The Bachelorette, I thought, okay, so I've seen this. I can't imagine they have any more tricks. Why would I want to watch it again?
Right.
So I'm sure there are people who will watch this and will think, he didn't watch every season like I did. And I'm just admitting right up front, no, I did not watch every season.
Yeah,
The question I have is, reading the book, the beginning of the book anyway, and you deal with it right up front, was the hardest part of The Bachelor, that first season of The Bachelor, was it being passed over, or was it being passed over on national TV?
I think at the time it was just being passed over, and then when reality sunk in and I realized that it would be shown on national TV, then it became more of being passed over on national TV. But, I tend to not have any regrets and think about the big picture, and the big picture was that I would be able to do the choosing the next time, and I ended up with Ryan, so it all worked out.
And the thing I never knew quite for sure was it planned that there would be a Bachelorette after The Bachelor, or was it...
I actually don't know. I've been asked that question before, and I don't know if they saw something in me that they thought, they would want to do a show with me, or if they saw, oh gosh, we could do this with a woman, or if it had always been planned. I honestly have no idea.
And your family and friends, when they, after seeing you go through, literally heartbreak on national television. Were they giving any pushback on the idea of doing it again?
No, no. They were very supportive, and I think that even if they had been skeptics, I still would have gone through with it because I felt so strongly about the fact that I could really find somebody.
Now, I mean, you were a professional woman. You were a Miami Heat dancer. I mean, I can't imagine you had that much trouble finding interested men.
You know, I dated, but I just couldn't find somebody that lived up to all the things that I was looking for. And maybe it's because I had really high standards and expectations, but I don't think you should settle. And I just wasn't finding that. So I figured, what the heck? Why not go for it on national television with this opportunity that they're giving me and see where it takes me?
And I wanted to ask you one other thing about this, and we're not going to linger too much on this, but I know people are interested. I'm curious, having seen that. So the show airs. You basically probably living in a bubble to a certain point, and then and the show still hasn't aired, and then it airs, and you Alex does not choose you, idiot that he may be, and then. you have there's time, but from then until you start shooting The Bachelorette, now it's aired, I think, you correct me on the timing, are men like reaching out to you in between going, oh my God, how could, you know, I'd love to go out with you?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I met people, but no, there weren't people that thought, oh gosh, she was on The Bachelor, you know, I need to be with her. Not really. Hmm. I moved to LA in that time. Between The Bachelor and The Bachelorette to, you know, prepare for the show and just give it a chance. And I actually had always wanted to move to California. So I figured that that was probably the best indicator that I should go for it. And because I asked for a leave of absence from my job for the second time, and my boss said, yeah, no, that's not happening. And so I just decided to go for it, even if The Bachelorette didn't come to fruition and we didn't, you know, figure out, you know, that it was going to happen or it wouldn't be with me, then I'd just try to get a job in California. Hmm.
And did you give any thought to what you might have learned from watching Alex in the pilot's position? What did he do right? What did he do wrong? And what did you take away from that for your own run?
I think the biggest thing that I took from Alex was actually something that hurt me in the long run. And that was, you know, 2 days before the final rose ceremony with Alex, he told me that he was going to choose me. And I took that to heart, went into the final rose ceremony thinking I was going to get engaged. And of course, I got my heart broken. And so when I did The Bachelorette, I didn't give in to my feelings until the very final day. I didn't let Ryan know how I was feeling until that final day. I mean, he literally had no idea what was going to happen. And that's because I didn't give him any reciprocation of the feelings that he was showing to me. So I wish that I had just given into my feelings and trusted what I was feeling and not thought, oh gosh, maybe I'll find out something that, you know, we don't have in common that would, you know, be a deal breaker. So I just wish that I would have given in and just forgotten about what Alex had done to me. Mm.
And, you know, in the dozen or so years since you did the show, and everything worked out very well, obviously, we've all heard all kinds of stories about the rigging of some of these so-called reality shows, where the producers manipulate things behind the scenes. They actually have plot lines that they want followed. You know, did you, on either series, were you receiving any instructions to behave a certain way, or do you think that Alex was... In that first Bachelor, was he given any instructions in terms of let's drag out the drama, let's make them think this? Or
I don't know about Alex, but I can tell you that they didn't with me. I mean, one prime example is the very first night there was a guy who stepped out of the limo and all he could look at was the camera. He didn't even look at me for about 10 seconds. And when we got down to who I was going to choose, I said, he's going home. And the exec producer said, what are you talking about? He's the guy I have chosen for you until the end. And I said, well, I'm sorry, he's going home. And he went home. So It was my decision. You know, I think that some people might allow them to do certain things with people maybe they don't have a strong connection with, but what you're seeing is real. The emotions are real. Yeah, the dates might be a fantasy, but what you're seeing is real.
And you write in the book about what was going on in your mind with Ryan as you're going through, and that he, you know, he really didn't know what was coming. And were you concerned that maybe he wasn't feeling it as reciprocally? That's probably not, I'm not saying it right, but you know, the same way that you were.
Well, he kept telling me that he was falling in love with me and falling in love with me. And I just thought that he would continue to, you know, fall in love with me and maybe he wouldn't decide that it wasn't worth it because I wasn't reciprocating anything. But little did I know that he disappeared the last day and went to a neighboring hotel. Nobody could find him because he was so frustrated. So thankfully he came back. And the rest of history.
And that, if he didn't come back, that would have been a whole other twist on the show, I guess.
That's it, and my children would not exist. So bad, bad, bad. I don't like the sound of that.
So. Well, it all worked out. It all worked out.
Okay.
All right, so I want to ask you about two particular moments, from the show. The first is that first moment that you laid eyes on Ryan. And the second is what was going through your mind in the moments leading up to actually choosing him at the end of the series.
When I laid eyes on Ryan, I kept my eyes on Ryan. He was one of my top four, and very attracted to him. Very attracted to his, you know, very calm, more introverted demeanor, but. Kind of how I described my son. He was very sweetly shy. So, you know, it was a really, really good first impression. And then the last night, I was just so ecstatic because I hadn't been able to give him verbal reciprocation. So it was finally that moment where I could tell him I had fallen in love with him. And I couldn't wait.
And have you watched either of those shows since finding your own Prince Charming? Would you have any reason to watch?
All of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I watch every single one of them. I'm a huge fan and always will be, I think, because it reminds me of how I fell in love. And I love love. I love watching people fall in love. And I'm a hopeless romantic. So, or I should say hopeful romantic. I think that I hope that everyone on the show finds the same kind of love that Ryan and I have. So I'll always watch.
Do you watch any of the ones that are not named The Bachelor or The Bachelorette?
Not necessarily, no.
So not a Cheaters fan, huh?
No, that's not my show.
All right. One of the things I was thinking about, although I did not continue watching the show, I know one of the biggest fans in the world of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette is, of all people, seemingly, Howard Stern. And
yes.
I wondered if you had any sense of why a guy like him or anyone else – I mean, you just described yourself as a hopeless romantic. What brings people to the show of all types? What, you know, what is it?
Well, I think people love to watch love happening in front of their eyes. And second, there's lots of drama. I mean, it's fun to watch people. You know, it's train wreck television sometimes. So why not watch, you know? And they're very beautiful people usually. So, you know, I think that attracts people. I think they're real people and they're going through the same kind of struggles that people go through. So they're relatable. I think those are probably the main reasons.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So the main reason you're here, obviously, is to talk about your new book.
Yeah.
Happily Ever After, The Life-Changing Power of a Grateful Heart. What inspired you to write it? I mean, you're obviously a very thoughtful person, but it's one thing to go from having these thoughts and keeping track of aphorisms and things like that to actually sitting down and writing your own book.
You know, I wanted to write something that would be meaningful, that would maybe inspire people, hopefully inspire people. I get contacted by people all the time saying that we've given them hope for finding their own Prince Charming or love story. And I just wanted to tell my story, but also tell the stories of other people who have inspired me. So the book is about gratitude and how powerful a role it has played in my life. And oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
In helping lift me up in the hard times and keeping me grounded in the really high times. And so the story is about, or the book is about stories from my life, but also stories from others who I know, who I don't know, who I've just read about on maybe the internet, and then lots and lots of research from the world of positive psychology that I've read over the years, plus quotes on how gratitude can truly make your life happier.
So you've read a lot of these types of books over the years.
I don't know that I'd say I've read a lot,
Oh, okay.
but of books necessarily. I just, as a mom and with such a busy schedule, reading just ends up being lower on the priority scale. But I'm trying to get better. Ryan will buy me books, you know, through the years. And yeah, but I think that it started because when I was in my 20s, I was watching Oprah, and she talked about a lot of the things that she talked about at that point in time were gratitude related. And she recommended that people write a gratitude journal and write five things that they were grateful for every day. So I did that in my 20s. And then when my daughter Blakeslee was born, Twitter was really, kind of the up and coming thing. That was about 4.5 years ago. And so I joined Twitter, and on Twitter and Facebook every night, I would post my favorite part of the day. It started as a way to connect with the family and friends that we have, you know, all across the country or the globe, and to let them know, kind of get them in on our day. And then it grew to just holding myself accountable in a very public way to share something positive and reflect on the good things that happened in the day, especially if it was a bad day.
Is it something that you? How old are your children?
Four and six.
All right, so they're starting to be at that age where maybe there's some lessons and gratitude that you can
For
express
sure.
to them. How do you get that across to children, though?
Oh, I think it's just a consistently choosing to live a lifestyle that includes gratitude. Every night at bedtime, we say our prayers. We say what our favorite part of the day was, and they say their magic words, which are, if you saw the movie The Help, it's they said, "I am kind, I'm brave, I am important," or something like that. So we say their magic words, and we say what their favorite part of the day was. And as I said, it's just a way for them to focus on the positive, knowing at the end of the day, every day, that they're going to have to look for something good in every day. And then for Christmas, I just bought them both little tiny gratitude journals that they either write one thing or draw one thing that they're grateful for. So I think it's just, you know, being a good role model for your kids. And you know, they learn, they are sponges. So they take everything from you, even if it's something that you're not saying, your attitude, your energy. And I just try to live my life like that. I am not perfect. You know, I have my moments when I'm frustrated or I'm sad or I'm angry. And I think that it's really important to let yourself have those moments within reason. And then gratitude will help get you back to living a happier life in a more timely way.
Do you believe in karma?
I do a little bit. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's the golden rule too, you know, treat others how you should be treated. All of those things, karma, you know, integrity. I've talked to my son about integrity and making good choices when he's at school and other kids are making bad choices, and making good choices even if mommy and daddy are there, because, you know, even if no one's watching, you still have to make good choices in order to have, you know, some semblance of integrity. So I think it's just about, you know, conversation with them when they're young and showing them a good role model.
And in the book, as I say, you kind of mix aphorisms with actual anecdotal stories from your life. How do you decide what to share and what not to share? And like, were there things that at the last minute you pulled back on? You know, maybe that's a little too personal.
Well, there are stories that I reached out to people in my life, stories that have touched me in either negative or positive ways that I wanted to share. And there were a couple that people were not okay with me sharing, and I completely respect that. I'm not out there to expose anyone's secrets. I just wanted to share stories that would hopefully inspire people. So, you know, my life is not necessarily an entirely open book, but I do so in order to share my experiences so that maybe they will help other people in the long run. And I think it's working. I mean, I've gotten so much great feedback from people who are saying that it's changing their life and their perspective and making them happier and helping them deal with death and with difficulties in their marriage. And, you know, their husband just lost a job and they have to relocate. And, you know, all of these issues that people are reaching out to me about. And it just makes my heart happy to know that it's touching people in that way.
There's a line in the book that I really liked. This was page 195. I just wanted to read it from here because I really liked it.
Yeah.
It's the subhead is, "It's all about perspective." And you say, "My husband recently told me that he wasn't a glass half full kind of guy. He said, I prefer to choose the right size glass so that it's always full." And you say, "My response, you don't always have the option to choose the size of your glass, but you do always have the option to choose how you view it." I actually love that line of his, that he's just going to choose the right size glass. I thought, you know, so many years of hearing that that expression, you know, is the glass half full, is it half empty?
Right.
I just choose the right size. To me, that was my favorite part of the book.
I'm glad.
I really like that.
He's a pretty smart guy. Even if I don't agree with him all the time.
What? You don't agree with him all the time?
Horror.
Wow, I thought it was just my wife who didn't agree with me all the time. So did you learn anything about yourself from writing the book that maybe you hadn't had to either focus in on or just weren't aware of until you started putting these things down on paper?
You know, I think that what I learned is that I can accomplish anything. I think that I'm not a writer by trade, and I had a difficult thing in front of me of 200 and I think it's 54 pages to write on my own, and it was daunting at times, and I definitely hit writer's block a few times, and it was hard. I mean, I have a 4 and a 6-year-old and a husband who wants to spend time with his wife, so, you know, finding time to write and balancing, you know, spending time, quality time, present time with my family and my friends and getting my work done was difficult because I am a stay-at-home and work mom. So, you know, but I learned that if I want to accomplish it, then I'll accomplish it. And I'm proud of myself for doing that.
And who would you recommend the book to? I mean, who do you see as the audience?
You know, it's funny because when we were talking about who the demographic would be initially, just in the writing style and who I was writing to, originally my editor thought, well, it's obvious to women and mothers mostly. And I thought, so I was saying, you know, if you're a mom, but then I changed it because I really feel like gratitude is for everybody. It's for young and old. It's for men and women. It's for people who are happy, people who are sad, people who are going through troubles and people who are not. So I honestly feel like it's for everyone and anyone who can use a little bit more happiness in their life and who can't.
All right. One more thing before we let you go. So you've mentioned that you're a stay-at-home mom and that you're a working mom. So can you give folks just an idea of what like a typical day for you would be like?
Yeah. Well, like this morning, I got up about 6:30. I got ready a little bit before the kids woke up. Well, before Max woke up, I got his juice and set him in front of the TV for a little bit. I made lunches. I got myself ready. And then I woke Blakesley up and, you know, we got in the car, went to school for drop off. I came back here to do this stuff. So even if it's not an interview, I'm working on my computer trying to get through emails because we don't have a manager or a publicist. I do all of that myself for our, you know, our personal stuff. And so it's, you know, work while I have the time. If Ryan's working, especially trying to get to the gym to stay healthy, having snacks, lunch, and then picking up the kids, getting them to their different activities if they have them that day, getting dinner, reading, bedtime, brushing teeth, and then they're in bed. And then most of the time I usually sit and watch some kind of television. I was watching The Bachelor obviously last night, and then I watched Revenge. So that's kind of my me time. And then hit the sack. So that's usually the day. It's really honestly like probably everyone's day. unless you're at a job. So I just, this is where I work. This is my place of business at home. Maybe not in my husband's office, but but yeah, that's my day.
Folks, am I the only one who thinks it's funny? She watches The Bachelor and then Revenge. I don't know. Oh. We're just thinking,
well,
you know.
They show after each other, and I'm a huge fan of Revenge. I love that show.
Well, just considering your history with The Bachelor, just to be able to watch a show called Revenge afterwards,
yeah, right?
Seems very appropriate. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Trista Sutter's book, Happily Ever After, The Life-Changing Power of a Grateful Heart, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching this video on the site, just below the video, somewhere there, or maybe over there, you'll see a copy of the book. Just click on it right now. It'll take you Amazon. You can have the book in, probably electronically in seconds, or if you need to have it physically because you're an old-fashioned type of person, you can have it in a day or two from Amazon. Trista, the website, Facebook, Twitter. You mentioned Twitter. How do people find you online?
Twitter, I'm at Trista Sutter. Instagram, Trista Sutter. Trista Sutter fan page on Facebook. And then you can find all of that on TristaSutter.com.
How convenient.
How convenient.
Trista, it was delightful to meet you. It's a fascinating story. The book's a lot of fun. You can learn a lot from it. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
You too.